reading at that point and trust that God will help us. Jesus had just crossed over from the other side of the lake, of Capernaum. He'd been in Gadara, where the Gadarene demoniac was. And he had attracted a great crowd. So in verse 21 we read that when Jesus had crossed over again by boat to the other side, a great multitude gathered to him, and he was by the sea. So he hadn't gone far from getting out of the boat, the small boat that he was in. As Jesus spoke to this crowd, a man whose name was Jairus approached him quite deliberately. This man wasn't just one of the crowd that was there to hear Jesus. He was a man whose whole demeanour gave the clear sense that he was a man on a mission, and a desperate mission. The man had a 12-year-old daughter who was desperately sick. Luke chapter 8 tells us about this. This account is found in Matthew, Mark, and in Luke. And in Luke 8 and verse 41, behold, there came a man named Jairus, and he was a ruler of the synagogue. And he fell down at Jesus' feet and begged him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter about 12 years of age, and she was dying. Jairus was a leader of the Capernaum synagogue. He was a ruler of the synagogue. He was a member of the Sanhedrin. He had great power and great authority locally. This is an amazing account of how much respect Jesus was not demanding from the people. He never demanded respect, but he gained respect from them. These were really his enemies. The leaders of the Jewish system were really quite opposed to him. It's also interesting to look into Luke 7. Jesus came to Capernaum, the very place that we're thinking about now. And when he got there, it was almost certain that this Capernaum synagogue is the synagogue of which Jairus was a leading man. And Jairus was probably one of those men that came. In Luke 7 you read this: when he had concluded all his sayings in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum, and a certain centurion's servant who was dear to him was sick and ready to die. So when he heard about Jesus, he sent elders. And I would suggest that it may be, I would be surprised if it wasn't, it was Jairus that went to Jesus, pleading for him to come and help his servant. Now, I want us to deal with this issue about Jairus and some of the things that are found in that section. The first thing that we're going to look at is Jairus' approach to Jesus. Jairus approached Jesus in his own right. He went. Sometimes it's much easier when you have a problem like that and you say, well, could you have a word with him? But here, Jairus hasn't got time for that. He hasn't got time for that luxury. In verse 22 of Mark 5, you read this: behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, when he saw Jesus, that is, he fell at his feet. Now it's interesting that a ruler of the synagogue would fall at the feet of Jesus. If you read a similar Luke 8, behold, there came a man named Jairus. He was a ruler of the synagogue, and he fell down at Jesus' feet and begged him to come to his house. Matthew, in Matthew 9 and in verse 18, Matthew is bold, very bold here. While Jesus spoke these things to them, behold, a ruler came and worshipped Jesus. He worshipped Jesus, saying, "My daughter has just died, but come and lay your hand on her and she will live." I think we can draw from that, and quite sure that we can draw from that, that when something touches a man or a woman at a point of deep need, there is an urgency in the manner of that person that is far more than a mere academic argument. Something has got to be done. Something needs to be done. When Jairus left home that morning to find Jesus, his daughter was alive. But now he's not even sure. And you can imagine, I think, the difficulty that would have been in Jairus' mind, and the tension and the demeanour as he pleaded with Jesus. This wasn't, "Do you think you can find the time over the next few days to come and see my daughter?" No, the issue was, she's dying. I don't really even know how she is now. Mark 5, verse 22, "Behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name. When he saw him, he fell at his feet and begged him earnestly, saying, 'My little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, that she may be healed, and she will live.'" There was a pleading in Jesus, in Jairus at this point. Whatever else there was in this plea, there was passion and there was urgency. It would have been the greatest of grief to Jairus had this request been refused. Had Jesus had said to him, "Sorry, I've got other things to do." And if we read this rightly, it becomes a great model for prayer for us. We can plead with our Saviour. He's not averse to listening to the prayers of his people. Next point that we need to look at is Jesus' response to Jairus. Jesus' response to this request for help is very clear, though no words are spoken. We don't have in either Matthew, Mark or Luke a response from Jesus that says, "Jairus, I'm on my way." He doesn't do that. He just seems to go. As far as we know, Jesus went with Jairus promptly, with no words at all. Jesus seems to have gone without any hesitation. Now remember that Jesus was in the midst of a great multitude at that time. And Jairus had got to him and spoken to him. But Jesus was ready to leave that crowd, as he will leave any crowd, and go where he is genuinely needed. So we can go and we can ask our Saviour about so many things that might come to us. Now the crowd that we noticed at the beginning was still there. They didn't disappear, they didn't go. They were crowding Jesus, we're told, in such a way that they were almost suffocating him. Verse 24, "Jesus went with him," that is Jairus, "and a great multitude followed him and thronged him." They thronged him. The crowd didn't want to leave Jesus. Perhaps they wanted to see what might happen at Jairus' house. But they didn't want to leave Jesus. At this point, we can imagine that Jairus was uplifted when he had left home that morning. He wasn't sure what was going to happen, but now he knows that Jesus will go with him. There was, without any question, some high degree of encouragement to Jairus. Somebody's coming that can help her. In the same way that poor little Sam, there were several years where nobody knew what was wrong with Sam. And all of a sudden, the sense comes that there is some doctors in London that might help him. His parents were over the moon at that point, absolutely over the moon. So here's Jairus now, with Jesus by his side, with a great crowd of people. But the next point that we look at is this. Jairus is slide into unbelief. He's slide into unbelief. While our Lord is on the way to Jairus' home, he was approached by another sick person. Not somebody that wasn't needy, but somebody that was sick, a woman that had taken up, or that was about to take up, some of the time of Jesus. And we're not going to deal with that situation now. But think of this. Your hopes have been lifted, and then all of a sudden something happens, and there's a slide back. I can imagine Jairus thinking, couldn't Jesus come back and deal with this woman? Couldn't he come back? This woman has been ill for 12 years. My daughter has only been alive for 12 years. We can think of all of these things. A messenger then comes from the house of Jairus. When this woman comes on the scene, and nobody despises her, and I'm sure Jairus didn't. But you can imagine that poor old Jairus' heart begins to sink. You know, why? Come back. Come and deal with my daughter. And then come back and deal with her. Or let her come with us. And then when you've dealt with my daughter, deal with her. All kinds of arguments come up there. But at this point, a messenger comes from Jairus' house, telling Jairus his daughter has died. She's gone. There's no need to trouble Jesus anymore. It's beyond him. That's the news that comes. Now, it doesn't take much to imagine Jairus being even lower than he was at the beginning. If she's died, there's nothing more to do. And Jairus probably at this time wouldn't have expected anything more. Jesus could heal her, but I'm not sure that he could have raised her from the dead. That would have been some of the sort of thinking that Jairus might have had. That was certainly the thinking of these messengers that came from Jairus' home. But then, when we come into verse 35, we read this. While he was still speaking, some came from the house of the synagogue's ruler, from the ruler of the synagogue's house, and said, "Your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But while these people are still speaking, and Jairus is down, he's low now. Verse 36, as soon as Jesus had heard the word that was spoken, he said to the synagogue, to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not be afraid, only believe." Now, what's happening here is this. Jesus is interrupting these people. These people have come with bad news. Jesus jumped right in. As soon as these devastating words fell from that messenger's lips, Jesus was there. How gracious of Jesus to interrupt. Jesus wastes no time with niceties. Certainly on this occasion he doesn't. The moment that the explosive words dropped into Jairus' ears, Jesus was there. He didn't stop the word exploding, but he did stop it doing widespread damage. And sometimes our Lord does that to us. Sometimes he doesn't stop difficulties that are about us and around us. But oftentimes he does stop the devastating consequences that can come from a wrong understanding of what he's doing with us. two commands flow from the things that Jesus says. First of all, Jesus says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Do not be afraid, only believe. That first part of the sentence, it's a fascinating word, don't be afraid. The term afraid is a present tense, and it's a continuous one, which means, gives the sense that something is to be done now, immediately, and continued. It's also a negative word. Stop being afraid. Stop being afraid now, this minute, and continue being unafraid. This really then is a command that comes from Jesus. At this instance, you've just been told your daughter's dying. Listen, stop being afraid. Don't let that thing grab a hold of you. But then the second command that comes from Jesus at lips is that Jairus is to believe. Do not be afraid, only believe. This also is a present and a continuous tense. But it doesn't have a negative element about it. It's not negative. Jairus, you must go on believing. You must not allow any unbelief to creep in at this point. You must resist any attempt at doubting. Don't allow it near you, or it will cripple your mind and your thoughts into paralysis. Keep on believing in my power and my ability. Poor old Jairus at this time, to say the very least, is in a confused state of mind. He woke that morning with the awful prospect of his daughter's deepening sickness. Would she last? He had heard that Jesus was in the area, and he left home to find Jesus and persuade him to help her. Will he come? Will he come? He set off from home with a heightened sense of encouragement, only to find that another sick woman came to Jesus. His encouragement is dashed again. Then the devastating news comes that his daughter has died. No good asking Jesus to come. Here we can see perhaps the confusing situation that had come upon Jairus. He's down, he's up, he's down, he's doubly down, as it were. But then he's told that he must carry on believing. He must carry on believing. He must not allow doubt to take him by the throat. Here, there is an awful sense that doubt and unbelief can creep in. Now, I would be surprised if this kind of situation has not happened to all of us at times. Not all the time, because sometimes God gives us such grace that we can say, well, that's wrong. That is untrue. And we know that, but there are times when our fallen nature will welcome those uninvited calls to doubt. Another point that we must continue to look at here is Jesus' approach, not now to Jairus, but to Jairus' house. Verse 37. Jesus permitted no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. So in some way or another, Jesus has extricated himself from that vast crowd that was around him. Then he came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and he saw a tumult and those who wept and wailed loudly. When he came in, he said to them, why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping. And they ridiculed him. And when he had put them all outside, he took the father and the mother of the child and those who were with him and entered where the child was lying. Jesus had clearly entered the house at this time. It had been a small house. It was there that those professional mourners were making their presence felt and heard. They were causing a tumult. And that's a very graphic word. They were throwing the whole situation into confusion. In Acts 17, you read these words. The Jews who were not persuaded, becoming envious, took some of the evil men from the marketplace and, gathering a mob, set the city in an uproar and attacked the house of Jason. Now, it's quite a different situation here. But they, the same word is used there, where a tumult was being caused. They set the city in an uproar. The house of Jairus at this time was in an absolute uproar. This was what the mourners did at the house of Jesus. And you could imagine again that poor old Jairus is driven even lower at this point. Jairus hears all these things. And he's been around, he knows what happens. He knows that here is the usual way that one greets a death. These mourners come. But then something else comes. When he came in, he said to them, that is the mourners, not the mourners, the mourners. We do from time to time meet mourners, but oftentimes we meet mourners. And Jairus met mourners. When he came in, he said to them, why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping. Now, these mourners then laughed Jesus to scorn. They knew dead when they saw him. They'd seen dead people. They'd carried dead people. There was something, however, quite incongruous with what these mourners were doing. Here, in the place where somebody's 12-year-old child had just died, they changed from professional mourning into laughing. Oh, it's incongruous. Sometimes, I don't know whether they do it down in these wild parts of the country, but up in where we came from, if somebody had died, curtains were drawn. You hardly did anything. The bedroom curtains were drawn, the downstairs curtains were drawn. You were considered a bit of an odd character if anything happened. Compare this scene to what Jesus had said about the child. These things Jesus said after he had said to the crowd, our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go that I may wake him. Then his disciples said, Lord, if he sleeps, he'll get well. However, Jesus spoke of his death, but they thought that he was speaking about taking rest in sleep. Then Jesus said to them plainly, Lazarus is dead. Now, there are times when we use phrases that some people don't understand. And I think this was the case here. I'll give you an illustration. I can't remember how many years ago it was now, but I was in the police station in Mill Street in Manchester. And I was working on the radio. And if you worked on the radio on a particular shift, it was your duty to put the kettle on every hour. That was a labour. And I'd made the coffee, and then I was instructed by the station sergeant, call all the other sergeants in. There were two of them out on the road. One of them was a man called Darrell. I'll not give you his second name just in case. But I called Darrell, And the usual way of asking them all to come in was, Mr. Maxwell is waiting for you. Now, you know, Mr. Maxwell made some coffee. Mr. Maxwell is waiting for you. Maxwell House actually began in Nashville, in case you're interested. If you're not, it doesn't matter. But that's where it began. And I called Darrell up and said, there's a Mr. Maxwell waiting in the office. He wants to speak to you. And Darrell came back on the radio and he said, will you ask him what he wants? And I responded, I've no idea what he wants, but he urgently wants to see you. So Darrell came back on in the same state and he said, go and ask him what he wants, otherwise I'm not coming in. So I just about had enough of this at this time. And so I said to Darrell, Sergeant, whatever his name was, the coffee has just been made and it's going cold. And if you don't wake up, I'll drink it. And then he came in, not in a very good state of mind. But you see, sometimes we use phrases like, Mr. Maxwell's in the office and he wants to see you. Now, everybody knew what that meant. But Darrell, after that night, he knew what it meant. Now, there are many ways of interpreting this passage where Jesus said, the child is not dead, but sleeping. Many ways of trying to get round that. I think the simplest way that we can read that is this. Jesus said, she is dead, but she's not died to stay dead. She is dead, but she's not died to stay dead. Now, this place was not the place where weak faith, such as Jairus had at that point, was not a good place for him to be. So, in Mark 40, when they ridicule him, Jesus then put them all outside. Now, there must have been, we can't put too much on this, but there must have been some almost physical pushing him out. And I think that must have happened. I wouldn't want to go any further than saying that there was some sense in which Jesus wasn't messing about with these people. They had to go. Now, at that point, Jesus took the father and the mother of the child and those who were with him and entered where the child was lying. Verse 40 says that. But in the original, the word lying is not in. Jesus took the father and the mother and the disciples that were with him and they entered where the child was. And it does make a difference. The mourners had gone. All the sense of uproar was now gone. Peter and James entered the room, John and Jesus and the parents. And this was the room where the little girl was. As far as we're aware, that was the first time that Jairus had been back in that room since he saw his daughter alive that morning. And now he comes in. And it would seem that it was a few feet away, no more than where the door is of the church now, from where I'm stood. But it must have been miles for Jairus to go in and look at that little girl. But he did, and Jesus went with him, and the others. Jesus then took the hand of the little girl and spoke some very simple words. There was nothing dramatic, no shouting, no excitement. He took the little girl's hand and he just said, Talitha kumai, which translated means, little girl, it's time to get up. She'd probably heard it many times before, but not in the same context. Oh, she got up. She was up. And she walked about. She walked around. She didn't just walk to Jesus or walk to Mum or walk to Dad. She walked around. That's the sense of the word here. Those then who were present in the house and those that were outside were amazed. And the word there for amazed is ecstasis, which we nowadays would think of as ecstatic. That's a good translation of that word. They were blown away by what had happened. And Jesus says, don't let anyone know. Now, there was no way that what had happened could be explained in human terms. The fact that the girl was sick and had died could not be hidden. Couldn't be hidden. But the manner of her healing could be hidden. And that's what Jesus, I think, is referring to here. And there are many ways of applying this situation to our own hearts. The ups and downs of faith. It is a common Christian experience. We mustn't get to the point of saying, well, am I really a Christian? I doubt. And I wonder whether Jesus can do this. Hold on to that thought, dear people. Hold on to it. Another thing I believe that comes out from this passage is this. There are three different incidents in our Bibles, in the Gospels, where people have been raised from the dead. Each one having a slightly different degree of amazement. The one that we're just thinking about. The death had occurred very recently. Minutes, if not hours. We don't know exactly. And we can imagine Jesus going and the child rising again. And some probably didn't even know that she died. But then, if you look in Luke's Gospel in chapter 7, you see the account of the widow of Nain's son. When Jesus came near the gate of the city, behold, a dead man was being carried out, the only son of his mother. She was a widow, and a large crowd from the city was with him. The young man in this incident would probably have died within the last 24 hours. It wasn't immediate death. He'd already been prepared for whatever burial ceremonies they had. He had been dead for a little while. Hours, if maybe a day, but no more than a day, I wouldn't have thought. So, the one that we're looking at in Mark's Gospel died quite soon before Jesus went. Widow of Nain's son was raised, maybe a day or so after. But then in John 11, the issue of Lazarus. Lazarus had died and the news got to him and Jesus said to the disciples, we're not going yet. We're not going yet. And he waited 2 days. And then in John 11 and verse 39, Jesus said to the two sisters of Lazarus that were there, Martha, the sister of him who was dead, said to him, Lord, by this time, there's a stench, for he's been dead 4 days. And Jesus calls. Lazarus had been dead for 4 days. It may be thought that perhaps there was more power and influence on the life of this Lazarus. 4 days. Can Jesus do remarkable things? Well, turn to John 5, and in verse 26, you read this. For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son to have life in himself, and has given him authority to execute judgment also, because he is the Son of Man. Do not marvel at this, for the hour is coming in which all who are in the grave will hear his voice and come forth. Those who have done good to the resurrection of life, and those who have done evil to the resurrection of condemnation. It's a remarkable thought. But one day, Jesus will come and he will say, Lazarus, or whatever your name is, come forth. And thousands will rise. And he's able to do that. If he can do that, what can he not do? Be strong in faith, friends. God will help you. Now let's sing another hymn together. 200.